Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Our first guest of the new year is from CHDI, the Child Health and Development Institute, discussing their newly launched Connecting Schools to Care for Students initiative to integrate trauma-informed comprehensive school mental health supports into the existing community-based network of care, as well as connecting you to their helpful Connect for Families toolkit. Then we're going to introduce you to the Governor M. Jody Rell Center for Public Service at the University of Hartford, providing a community and academic forum for the discussion of ethics in government, the importance of civil discourse in politics, and citizen involvement in public service and government. We're also going to discuss how the center is looking to encourage students and others to pursue careers in public service. And then we're going to close with our contact at the Connecticut League of Conservation Voters. If you've been hearing all the talk about eliminating fuel-burning vehicles on state roadways or things going on with offshore wind, or you have growing concerns about the state of our environment, we invite you to be part of the CTLCV 2024 Environmental Summit coming up in a couple of weeks. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. Voices for Volunteers of Fairfield County, an appreciation performance concert, is going to honor individuals who volunteer their time in support of organizations throughout Fairfield County with a concert by a stellar cast of Broadway professionals who also call Fairfield County their home. It's happening on Wednesday, January 24th at 7:30 p.m. at the nonprofit Westport Country Playhouse. Tickets are $50 and available on a first-come, first-served basis. You can get ticket info and a complete schedule of Playhouse events at westportplayhouse.org. Well, we are back in here in 2024, and as promised, we have brought back an organization that has just been a tremendous resource to our program and listeners, and I'm excited to welcome a new member of that organization to the Greater For the People family. We are here with Dr. Gina Bracey. She's Associate Vice President for Schools and Community Initiatives for CHDI, the Child Health and Development Institute. Gina, welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us, and thanks for being the next in a long litany of fantastic guests here on our program.
Thank you so much, John. I appreciate the invitation to come and share our work with you. And as always, we at CHDI love having an opportunity to talk with you and share with your listeners all the great things we're doing over here.
So folks, especially those who have students in their lives, are going to be hearing a lot more about this first of two initiatives we're going to be talking about. And it is so exciting and important because we've been talking so much over the past decade about the really the crisis in mental health with our younger people here in Connecticut and across the country. Perhaps it is even a global phenomenon, but thanks to the folks at CHDI and you, the state of Connecticut has launched Connecting Schools to Care for Students. This initiative will integrate trauma-informed and comprehensive school mental health supports into existing community-based networks of care. And so beyond that brief introduction, let's first remind people what CHDI even is all about and your role in it with the school and community initiatives piece of it.
Yes, absolutely. So at CHDI, or the Child Health and Development Institute, we work really statewide across Connecticut to improve the behavioral health and well-being of children, youth, and families. So our goal is really to work at the systems level to advance effective practice and policy solutions that result in equitable and optimal behavioral health and well-being for children and their families. So we work together with many partners across the system in terms of state agency partners, local community-based providers, schools, pediatric primary care, the full system of care across Connecticut to make sure that the services are accessible and that they get the best quality outcomes for students.
Yeah, the thing that I've always admired about CHDI and your means of operation is that you bring all the treetops together, you engage both the policy makers and doers face to face with, and often in the same place as the individuals who are going to be served by them. And this program appears to also check that box. Tell us about the development of this Connecting Schools to Care for Students initiative.
Yes, absolutely. I'm really excited to talk about this initiative. So this has been several years in the making, and we actually call it Connect 4 for short, and that's because it's the fourth round of Connecting to Care funding for the state of Connecticut. And so this is using federal funds that's awarded to the Department of Children and Families. And our organization, CHDI, works as the coordinating center statewide for the implementation of this grant. And so where we are with this year and this round of the grant, as you mentioned, is really to focus much more intensively on schools. And as you started, you know, this conversation talking about how intensive the needs are, how much more aware I think we are of the needs that students are showing up to schools with, and what the capacity of schools are to actually manage those challenges and or to connect with their community-based partners to help, you know, do that in a collaborative way is really important. And so this opportunity over the next 4 years really gives us a chance to build on the work that has been done over the past several years, multiple rounds of this grant in Connecticut, to build up the statewide system of care. So again, every aspect that of a child's life that they touch, so from school, education, from the healthcare system to juvenile justice for kids that have that level of involvement, and that full spectrum. So anyone that's really involved in a child's life, what's the best way to kind of make sure that those services, that those supports are integrated and that they are equitable and that they result in strong positive outcomes for those children and their families? And so, again, we're looking at the opportunity to focus more directly on schools to help them be a very strong part of that system. So oftentimes kids are first identified at school. Sometimes the challenging behaviors might show up in school, or even it can look at as kids with being withdrawn or just showing difficulty engaging in the classroom. And so for that full spectrum of kids, what's the best way for them to access care, and what's the role of the school in that whole process? And so that's really kind of in a nutshell what this is all about.
So can you tell me a couple of the most successful components of the prior cycles of the system of care awards that will, serve as a solid foundation as you move forward to initiate the four key goals of the current Connect 4 initiative?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the using the systems of care values and principles, which are, again, kind of a nationally recognized framework for community-based services to be most efficient, effective, to serve kids in their homes and communities, sort of least restrictive settings possible, to invoke their cultural backgrounds and language backgrounds and needs. Those are kind of the key values and principles that all of this work has looked to integrate and to support and improve over these past few years. And so, you know, one key outcome of that has been to make sure that parents and youth and families themselves are engaged in that decision-making process. And so that's one of the key foundations of this work, is making sure that they're at all the decision-making tables from their local community up to the state level, where policies and practices are being decided, that families and consumers have a strong voice in leading that discussion and leading what happens to them. So it's not just to them, but it's with them. And then another key piece is really around making sure that services are equitable and appropriate. and that they are really, really speak to the cultural and linguistic needs of families. And so one of the other key successes of the previous, the work that's built this foundation is helping schools, or I'm sure helping communities and providers kind of understand, to kind of assess what their population looks like, who are those that are in need, who are those that are getting services and accessing services, and how can we strengthen the services in a way that meet their own needs in terms of their cultural and linguistic needs that then help them to engage most effectively and get the best outcomes from those services. So I'd say those are two really key components to highlight from the previous rounds of this work.
So the kind of funding to deliver these phases of the Connect program, they don't keep coming unless there is proven positive outcomes. How are we doing as a state, given the implementation of the first three phases of Connect, if you will?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, one of the things that we look at is, you know, where is access to the system improving? And so are more kids who need specific services, are they able to access those across the community? And so that's something we definitely look at increasing over time. And then quality is a huge piece of this work as well. So do we, you know, how does the quality improve? Are we looking at getting kids into services faster? Are they more appropriate services that meet exactly kind of what their needs are? Are they easily accessible for families in terms of transportation or, you know, being cost effective and efficient in that way? And again, ultimately, are kids getting better? And so those are where we're definitely seeing positive outcomes in each of those areas to continue to kind of sustain and build upon that effort as we move forward. And I think, you know, there's always more work to be done, of course, and but I think to see those gains kind of year over year and to see more students, or more children and youth benefiting from the service system is ultimately what we're looking for.
Very good. If you're joining us here for this first interview of 2024, we're with Dr. Gina Bracey. She's Associate VP for School and Community Initiatives at CHDI, the Child Health and Development Institute. They have been a long and a regular resource to us here on For the People, so it was appropriate that we invite them in for this very first discussion of the new year, especially in a year where we'll all probably be turning more of our attention to taking better care of the mental health of our youngest state residents. CHDI has just initiated the fourth phase of their Connect initiative and is going to be utilizing Connecticut's established framework for trauma-informed comprehensive school mental health to address four key goals in the coming year and course of this program. Before we turn our attention to the Connect for Families toolkit, Dr. Bracey, what's the last word you can leave parents and interested listeners with in regards to the Connect for initiative? When will they be hearing more about it from the front lines in their child's own school or community environment?
That's absolutely our number one goal for this first year of the grant, is to disseminate information widely to all 206 public school districts in Connecticut, as many of those as we can get to this year, to share information about what is this sort of comprehensive school mental health approach that we are looking to implement and expand statewide, and what's available to them currently. And so there definitely will be hearing information soon about all of that. And we always have information sort of readily available on our website at any point as well.
And folks that are listening can get right on to chdi.org and connect to the Connect for Families toolkit, which has been around and also has provided some great success. Let's turn our focus to that in the last 4 or 5 minutes that we have.
Yes, absolutely. We're so excited to share this resource that recently came out of this initiative, and it is available on our website. We also have the planforchildren.org website where you can find this information and more about the whole Connecting to Care initiative. But this product itself, the toolkit product, was a partnership between us and Department of Children and Families, who I'd mentioned, as well as Carillon Behavioral Health, FAVOR, Family Advocacy Organization, and the Consultation Center at Yale, who serves as the evaluator for this initiative. And together, we really found a need to kind of have a one-stop shop for families, but also providers and community members to help understand, how do I find mental or behavioral health services for kids and families in my community? How do I access that information? If I'm a provider, how do I actually communicate and collaborate well with other providers, whether that be other behavioral health providers or primary care providers? What's one way to sort of bring all that information together in a really easy, accessible kind of place? And so that was the impetus behind developing this online toolkit. So it is online. And one other reason for making sure that it's online is that we can then update it more easily. There are lots of links in this toolkit. There are several different sections. There's many ways to sort of navigate between sections and pages. It's very user-friendly. And it gives 6 overall sections to help users kind of understand the system and navigate the system a little bit more effectively. And so just to quickly highlight those sections, there are 6 sections. One is finding behavioral health services and supports. So where do you start? Where do you go? The second gives you the why, the what, the how, the when, all of those pieces around effective collaboration. Mm-hmm. Again, how do you work well together? The third section is on electronic tools to support collaboration, so electronic medical records, those kinds of things. There's a section on confidentiality and how to go through the consent process to share information or restrict sharing information that you don't want to share. Tips from parents specifically and youth and providers for each other around how to effectively collaborate. And then the final section is more designed for providers, but just kind of understanding that evolving coding and billing landscape, because there's a lot of complicated information out there. And how do you kind of digest all of that and use that in a most effective way? So that's kind of a highlight of the toolkit overall.
Very good. Well, we appreciate you taking time to talk with us this morning. Our guest has been Dr. Gina Bracey. She's Associate Vice President for School and Community Initiatives for the Child Health and Development Institute, CHDI. We talk about them and feature their team a lot on our program because they're doing great work here in Connecticut, bridging a better and more equitable behavioral health and well-being initiatives for children, youth, and families here. We thank you, Doctor, and Happy New Year, and we look forward to the next steps and our next visit with CHDI. Well, as you heard from the introduction, in our mission to expose our listeners to all kinds of things they never heard about before on the award-winning For the People, my first stop for the new year is the Governor M. Jody Rell Center for Public Service, and I'm pleased to welcome their director, Dr. Catherine Owens. And the Governor M. Jody Rell Center for Public Service was established at the University of Hartford in 2011. And the purpose of the Rell Center is to promote the values exemplified by the life and career of our 87th governor, Jody Rell, specifically the value of integrity in government and public service and responsible participation in public life, something we hope to see a lot, capital L-O-T, underline in 2024. Right, Catherine?
Absolutely, yes.
Let's push for a lot of integrity and responsible participation. I love the fact that the importance of civil discourse in politics is right up front there in the mission statement. And I have to say, Governor Rell was a multiple time guest here on our program over the years, first as lieutenant governor and then as governor. As a matter of fact, she probably qualifies as top state official who has been on this program the most. I've had other governors in clips or in single segments, but she was at least a three-peater during her tenure. So I'm really glad to be able to help carry on the torch and carry on her legacy by helping promote this fantastic center that you have been charged with. So first, a little about you. What brought a PhD from Georgia up to Connecticut and seated you at the head of the table here at the RELL Center?
Thank you so much for that introduction about the RELL Center in general. And yeah, it is, it's something that I've just been doing at the University of Hartford since 2019. I am originally from Georgia, a small town in South Georgia, and I went to college at the College of Charleston in South Carolina. And I had a great time in college, and I ended up with three undergraduate degrees, studio art, biology and anthropology. And then I went on to work through a master's of environmental studies, and I got my PhD actually in the Netherlands. And it was all about water policy in the Netherlands and in other places. And so my first job after finishing my PhD, I was ready, me and my family were ready to come back to the United States. And we were interested in moving to New England. And so my first job out of PhD was to work at the University of Hartford. And I've been there for about 16 years. The RELL Center has been around since 2011. And the director has always been a member of my home department, which is the Department of Politics, Economics, and International Studies at the University of Hartford, which is in the College of Arts and Sciences. And so I, over the years, I have this background in sort of environmental policy, but I'm this experience abroad, but you know, I'm interested in how that plays out in America. And so I've been working for several years on different ways to engage my students in the policy process. And so I was on a sabbatical in 2019. And when I returned, I had the opportunity to come on as director of the RELL Center at that time. And so it's a perfect match for the kind of things I was doing in the classroom, you know, where I'm trying to get my students to check out the legislature and think about, you know, learn about the policies that are being discussed there and try to engage with that process. So it's been a great opportunity for me to work with the RELL board and the former governor because they know so much about about that world, and I'm still learning, I have to say. Yeah.
And just to zoom in on one of the many lines under your signature. Just tell us a quick fun fact about the National Geographic experience.
Yeah, so I've been a National Geographic Explorer since 2019, and that's what you get to call yourself if you get funding from them. And as I said before, my work in the past has been on water policy and environmental policy. And one of their key areas is plastic pollution. And so that's something I've worked on for the last decade or so. So I have funding from National Geographic. I've gotten to work in India and with researchers around the world in Indonesia and Uganda. Mm-hmm. And this past summer, I got to go on a trip with them to the Arctic Circle to circumnavigate Svalbard. So they're amazing. I mean, everybody loves National Geographic. I don't have to tell you how amazing they are, but I'm really excited that I get to work with them sometimes.
Wow, that's fantastic. Well, let's turn our attention to the center. I guess we'll get into the kind of extended information that our program does. But first and foremost, does it offer resources, and does it welcome not only University of Hartford students but the general public as well?
Yeah, we kind of, when I first came on in 2011, in 2019, the pattern had been sort of one or two public events per year that were often on campus, but had an outward facing sort of audience, and then one sort of student centered event per year. And so that might be, that they host a panel on campus with legislators and experts from the media to talk about, you know, political issues in the state, or we might bring back graduates who are working in the public sector or with public service to talk to our students about their career paths. And When I first came on, it was 2019, and, you know, spoiler alert, the pandemic happened pretty quickly after I started, and that had a huge impact on everyone's sort of in-person programming for a time.
Yeah.
So we were able to shift that and do some online, just like everyone else did at the time, some Zoom events. But I don't think at the time we realized how much of an opportunity that whole time period opened up for us in terms of people thinking about civil engagement, people yearning for more civil engagement from their leaders. So to answer your question, we do have public-facing programming, and then we have some programming for students. And I think we kind of do more sort of public-facing programming at this moment in time.
So do the people that you interact with, whether they're students or non-students at the university, are you holding out positive hope for 2024 and beyond that there is a growing interest and passion for better civil discourse in politics? I mean, are we getting to the tipping point where those who do not practice the best, or who do not adopt the best practices of civil discourse in politics, are going to get the message, or they're going to get fired by the voters eventually?
I mean, I hope so. I'm definitely a glass is half full kind of person. And so I latch on to the positive signs that I see. You know, I do think we're in this really kind of tumultuous period in our country's history where, because of, you know, technology and the ways we can be connected right now, it's kind of gotten ahead of us a little bit, and we haven't really established the rules around what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. But we've done some really interesting programming where we worked with this group called the Institute for Civility in Government. And they are interested in promoting, you know, just like it sounds, civility in government. And we collaborated with them to host workshops. And we did workshops the first year for the Connecticut Legislature and the Connecticut Association of Boards of Education, the Council of Small Towns, the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities. So we were kind of thinking, like, how do we support these people who are on the front lines of a lot of that negative sort of blowback from the public? How do we give them tools to weather that and to manage? You know, I think any of us, I think it's very human to be attacked and to want to react to that. But I think it can be much, you know, better for society if those those folks who are working on school boards or councils in towns, you know, have a little bit of training that can help them deal with that and maintain their composure so that people can kind of get their all their negative, you know, energy out and then come to the table to talk about solutions.
Right. So, well, I was going to say, we'll talk a little bit more about that, as well as some exciting opportunities for folks to be involved in the annual Civility Awards initiative. And we'll talk a little bit about upcoming activities with the RELL Center. I have Dr. Catherine Owens on the line, and she is the director of the Governor M. Jody RELL Center for Public Service at the University of Hartford. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back to talk more about the RELL Center and how they are working to play a role in improving ethics in government, enhancing the importance of civil discourse in politics, as well as promoting citizen involvement in public service and government. We'll be back with Dr. Owens in just a second. Stick with us. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. It's a pretty safe bet that most of us are or have been utilizing prescription drugs at some point. Wouldn't you like to pay less for them? Well, now Connecticut residents can enroll in a newly launched program, enabling them to receive a discount card that can be presented at pharmacies to receive a savings on certain medication. The discount card is provided through ArrayRx, a multi-state consortium. Connecticut recently joined that uses the leverage of bulk purchasing to offer up to 80% savings on generic prescription drugs and 20% savings on name brand prescription drugs. To receive your discount card, Connecticut residents have to apply online at ArrayRxCard.com. That's ArrayRxCard.com. Well, we are back, and we've got Dr. Catherine Owens on the line. She is the director of the Governor M. Jody Rell Center for Public Service at the University of Hartford. That center was established in 2011. She's been leading the organization since 2019. We were talking a little bit about their work toward promoting greater civil discourse in politics. So, Dr. Owens, do you think that the renewed interest and energy toward re-engaging students in civics education at the earliest possible age in our school systems here in Connecticut and across the country perhaps will play a role in helping you and your team at the Rell Center better accomplish your goals in that department?
Yeah, I mean, I think, obviously, as a political science professor, I think civic engagement is so important. And I think with everything, you know, when we're sharing information with students, when we're telling them about the big problems in the world, you know, the worst case scenario is that they lose hope. And, you know, what we really want is for them to feel their own political efficacy, to feel like what they do matters. And all the work that the Rell Center does with the Connecticut legislature and connecting students with that, I think, can really help them see the process and understand how to engage in the process and be a part of, you know, our society. So I think civics education is so important. And certainly that's something like that the Rell Center wants to support and promote.
So in the 12 years or so that the Rell Center has been in existence, I know that your center encourages students and others to pursue careers in public service and also supports student public service internships. Do you guys have like a little hall of fame yet of students who have been very engaged in the Rell Center who have gone on to either run for or be appointed to any high level public service political work?
That's a great question. And I think some of the people who had been the director of the Rell Center before me probably know of, you know, have a list. I can think of the students that our department has worked with who've gone on to do internships in the Connecticut legislature or gone on to work with lobbying firms or PR firms and engage in state politics, work with unions in the state. And so I can certainly think of students from our department who have made that local connection with politics and have gone on to make that their career.
Very good. Well, we want to turn our attention toward the future and the rest of what might be happening at and with the Rell Center in 2024. Are the annual civility awards on the radar for you, Dr. Owens?
They certainly are. And I'm so glad you mentioned them because I hope your audience will think of potential nominees or share it with people. We love self-nominations. We think, you know, the idea behind this award is to recognize a school or a teacher or a classroom that has implemented a project or a program that fosters civility. And we've had some amazing winners in the past. The Political Action Club at Farmington High School is one of our previous winners. That's a student-led club that hosts nonpartisan debates before local political races, and it's all done by the students with the support of their teacher, Lance Goldberg. And one of the other award winners we've had is a teacher from Spring Glen School in Hamden, Connecticut, Mary Nelson, who had a project focusing on spoken word poetry that got students to explore a lot of, this was right during the pandemic, a lot of the issues around civility or lack of civility that was happening at their school and in their community. But we would love, you know, to have nominations and to highlight the nominees and the winners through our podcast and our newsletter. There is a form that people can find on our website, which you can access at hartford.edu/rel. And it's just a Google form. It's a very short application process, but we're really, you know, we're really seeking those nominees because it's hard to get information out. There's so many sources of information out there that sometimes it's hard to connect your information with the right, you know, audience.
So this is an award to recognize K through 16 classrooms, clubs, or schools that encourage dialogue, action, education, or engagement around integrity in public discourse and civility. Hopefully 2024 and all that is in store for us in this really important year to come will be part of this. And we have the best turnout ever in terms of nominations. Once again, you just need to go to hartford.edu/rel and look for the application for their annual civility awards. Dr. Owens, any other activities on the radar yet as we move into this really, really important and high-profile election year?
Yes. I mean, we're continuing to do the work we have. You know, we're hoping to sponsor more speakers that promote civil engagement. And then with students on campus, we've collaborated with a group called ENACT, the Educational Network for Active Civic Transformation, which is out of Brandeis. And we're going to be promoting an app on campus called Motivote that helps. It's really for anyone, but especially for students who might miss the boat on you know, registering or not realize they need to register at home versus at school or, you know, that kind of thing. It provides sort of like useful information for them to meet deadlines and prepare and make sure they're registered to vote. So we're going to be promoting that app on campus in the coming year. We have a podcast that you can learn about on that website. And then the Civility Award is, I think, as you said, a really big one, especially this year.
Very good. So in terms of folks outside the school community and outside the greater Hartford region, just remind folks in the last couple of minutes that we have with you how they can get involved with the Governor M. Jody Rell Center for Public Service and what's the best way for them to do that, to tap your resources or to, you know, get up there and get into some activities?
Yeah. I mean, if anyone's interested in some of the things I've talked about, they're welcome to reach out to me. My email address is kowens@hartford.edu. And we have ongoing programming. We're always open to collaborations and discussing ideas, potential collaborations. And a lot of our workshops have been targeted towards specific organizations just because we want to make sure we're connecting with the people that we think can use it most. But as I said, we're always open to new collaborations and ideas, and they could check out our website to sort of see if programs are coming up or reach out to me and we can discuss.
Fantastic. The Governor M. Jody Rell Center for Public Service at the University of Hartford is providing the community and academic community a forum for the discussion of ethics in government, the importance of civil discourse in politics, and citizen involvement in public service in government. They're also encouraging students and others to pursue careers in public service and assist providing a clearinghouse for student public service internships. If you'd like to get involved or support this organization, you can begin just by visiting their website at hartford.edu, put a backslash in and the word REL, R-E-L-L, for our former governor. Their director is Dr. Catherine Owen. She's been kind enough to be our guest for this midpoint segment today on the award-winning For the Pigment, today on the award-winning For the Pigment. Well, just as we opened the program with our friends at CHDI, one of our more valued resources and longest tenured acquaintanceships here at the award-winning For the People, we will close in the same form. Lori Brown is with us with the Connecticut League of Conservation Voters. CTLCV.org is their website. This organization is a nonpartisan statewide nonprofit dedicated to giving our environment a voice at the Capitol. We talk with them often. They publish the environmental scorecard to let us all know how the folks we've voted into their roles in Hartford are doing at the State House. And we always try to invite all of our listeners to consider participating in their annual environmental summit. And that's what brings Lori on with us this morning. It is coming up on Tuesday, January 23rd at the Connecticut Science Center in Hartford. Kicks off bright and early in the 9 o'clock hour. And they're going to be talking about a bunch of important things that we've been talking about here on For the People as well. PFAS, food waste, pesticides, reducing vehicle emissions, and offshore wind. Just some of the items on the agenda. If you're interested in any or all of them, go and register now. Just hit the button at their website and they will sign you up virtually to attend. Lori, how you doing? Happy New Year. Thanks for joining us on this last segment of our first show of the new year.
Hey, John, thank you so much. I really appreciate, again, the opportunity to speak with you. Thank you so much, and Happy New Year to you, too.
So in our introduction to the program, we teased people to stick with us and listen to this final segment because, in part, we would be talking about something that they're seeing all over the news lately, and that is some individuals in Connecticut's very aggressive and progressive ideas about eliminating fuel-burning vehicles here favor of electric vehicles in the state of Connecticut. And this is something that's certainly going to be on the agenda for the environmental summit, right?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, nothing has slowed down since the end of the last session when we spoke last. And what really ramped up, of course, was the clean air standards. And we have goals in Connecticut, established goals that we have to reach to reduce, you know, air pollution, reduce tailpipe emissions. And the effort that is going on nationwide is to reduce to try to wean us eventually off of fossil fuels and transition to cleaner sources of transportation. And so I think one of the first things that I just have to say out of the box is that this is not a ban on gas-powered vehicles. So a lot of the opposition, which frankly is quite funded from out-of-state, national fossil fuel interests have been funding a lot of propaganda in Connecticut as well as in other states. About this being, you know, we're coming to take your car away, we're coming to give you no choices except electric vehicles. That's just not true. It's not a ban in any way on people buying an electric vehicle and driving an electric vehicle, owning, operating in Connecticut. You cannot simply buy what it is providing more choice to consumers as we go forward, that manufacturers will have to produce more electric vehicles to be sold in our state, and that the emissions from transportation, we know, is, you know, the largest source of climate pollution in New England. Yeah. And so we are one of many states that have gone in the direction of reducing there was called the clean vehicle standards. Mm-hmm. We have been a clean vehicle state for, you know, 20 years and benefited from that.
Sure. National
but the problem
leader.
Right now. Yeah, a national leader. But right now we are the only outlier in all the states between Vermont and Virginia on our side of the nation that has stepped back and is struggling with actually updating our clean car laws. And that's because of the efforts. And these are just really phenomenally good things for the public. I mean, it's good for jobs. It's good for the economy. It's good for climate. It's good for health. It's where everyone is going. And we need to catch up and do our best to stay on top and be a leader. So that's something that's been going on for several months, and we will discuss that at the summit. There are a number of other climate-related issues mm-hmm. that I think are incredibly important and really game-changing for climate, or could be. We did not have the progress we wanted on climate, you know, last session. So this is really an opportunity for, I mean, we've regrouped, we've reorganized. There are many, many dozens of groups that are going to be pushing really hard for some major changes in our climate efforts.
A couple of the other things we talked about with a number of other guests since you and I last talked, and that keeps coming up is something else that's on the agenda for the summit, and that's pesticides. And that's because as we utter the credo, no farms, no food, we have added the addendum, no pollinators, no farms. So it's a vicious cycle. And I remember talking to you a decade ago about the crisis in pollinators because of the neonics that were being applied to the flora of our state that were causing the deaths and die-offs of massive populations of pollinators, particularly bees. But now we're hearing about the rodenticides and how those are ripple affecting throughout the environment, affecting everything from our birds to our pets.
Yes. Absolutely. The neonics, I mean, the new mantra there I would add to the list of what you said is people's pets and pollinators. And the neonicotinoids are, you know, known as the neonics. They are absolutely toxic. And the problem, as you may remember, is that when you apply that neonics to the seed, which almost all of the corn in Connecticut has has been applied this poison to, it grows into the plant and moves up
part of the DNA of the plant. Yeah,
and I think something like 50% of people have neonics in their bloodstream right now because of that. And everybody who eats corn or drinks milk or, you know, is going to have this whatever, you know, as it works its way up.
Yeah, whatever food products are affected by it, yeah.
Exactly. So that, along with the rodenticides, that now also is a horrible system where, you know, you poison there are these poison bait traps that are outside of restaurants and homes and institutions. And those are designed to eliminate, you know, rodents and rats and mice. And those animals with the toxins that they're using right now to poison them, they don't die right away. It accumulates in their system, and they are the natural food source for hawks, owls, all the raptors, foxes, dogs, pets, you know, anything that would feed on naturally on a rodent is now being poisoned. And once they're poisoned, they die. Yeah. There's nothing that will help them in the wild because they will hide it as long as they can. Sure. If your pet or something and you know right away that they've ingested a rodenticide, then there is a possibility of helping or saving them. Mm-hmm. But they are basically guaranteed death. And almost 9 out of 10 of these raptors that are found and being brought into centers, it is a result of the rodenticide poisoning. Yeah. And they invariably die a very painful death. Mm-hmm. So I just would say that both the neonics legislation to get rid of the neonicotinoids and to ban, like you're reducing the neonicotinoids, restricting it, et cetera, because there are certain exemptions for that. But basically getting the seeds to not be coated with neonics is important. And also, again, with the rodenticides, getting the total ban on those most devastating of the rodenticide product. There's different versions of it, but it cannot be, it's not an option to phase in. It has, either they get rid of it or they are continuing to kill our raptors. So those two have both very robust coalitions and advocates and supporters and high hopes for getting those through this session.
Excellent.
But we need everybody, you know, it's a short session.
Yes.
It's a very short session.
Yeah.
And, we really are pushing hard for those two bills.
Yeah. Our time with you is also growing short. We've only got about three or 4 minutes left. And something else that we've been seeing a lot about, but sort of, you know, seeing the headlines and then kind of reading the dry dissertations that come after subjects like offshore wind. You know, it's easy to get the wrong idea because of, you know, companies going in or out of business or selling or buying or whatever. What's the one most important thing that you hope comes out of this year's environmental summit regarding advocacy for offshore wind?
Well, offshore wind is, you know, we've been fighting for that for a long time, is a essential component of reaching our clean energy standards, our clean energy goals. And I think what you're going to see is that it's, you know, it's not dead and over. It is absolutely alive and well and moving forward. So we have high hopes that there will be much more attention paid to the transmission of, you know, the offshore wind. That's a big piece that we'd like to see. And we'll have an update on all of this from some of the folks leading on this issue at the summit. We have, you know, panels with the big issues of like vehicle emissions, nature-based solutions, energy solutions, Munich, food waste, et cetera. And then we have interesting briefings from some key leaders on PFAS, offshore wind, and even on the Environmental Rights Amendment. So there's just a whole plan of networking and activity and information that everyone can get. And by the way, we are offering free tickets for students or youth 25 and under. So we have a limited number of free passes that we'd love to see more of our young people getting engaged and want to make that a possibility for them.
And so much better and more excitement as a result of this event now returning to the live format from our years of the virtual experience. So nothing like being face to face and talking important issues. And it's all going to go down at the Connecticut League of Conservation Voters.
The Connecticut Science Center.
Summit.
Yeah. And the Connecticut Science Center, January 23rd, that's in Hartford. And you can register right on our website. There's all different registration sort of buttons right at ctlcv.org or conservationeducation.org. We have two websites. And if you have any questions, just, you know, call our office or happy to provide more information on the agenda.
And I guess the other question is for those who are still more comfortable with connecting with organization, or I'm sorry, with events like this virtually, is there a virtual component?
Yes, absolutely. We found that people really like that. We had as many virtual as we did in-house. And so we want to make it as easy as possible. And we'll also make sure that there are materials that we will also be giving people all of our briefing papers on all of these issues and things that will be helpful for people who really want to stay on top of some of the issues and learn more about what the lawmakers are doing, because that's really the goal here, is to make sure that we have set a clear agenda of priority issues for legislators to then work on along with advocates in 2024.
Very good. This annual Environmental Summit is a unique event designed to bring together citizens, advocates, environmental leaders, lawmakers, and policy experts. And it is a great way for the Connecticut League of Conservation Voters to start each year as the legislative session begins. As Lori Brown from the League has just articulated, it's a short session and there is much to do. So being part of this summit and getting all the latest and best information so you can articulate it well to lawmakers that serve you and hopefully get the job done is at the forefront. Lori Brown with CTLCV, ctlcv.org is their website. You click on the button to register for the summit, or you just peruse the website and find out all about the work they are doing. Lori, great to have you again, and we will talk to you again after the summit or at some point during the session, I'm sure. So in the meantime, have a great 2024.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette.
I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.